Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Indie Football Podcast. Today I'm delighted to be joined by the sports editor of The Independent, Ben Burrows, and football reporter Jack Rathbone. And this week we are going to be talking about a few different clubs from outside the Premier League's established Big Six. So we're doing this podcast because in the wake of our very long and miserable Is Football Dead podcast, we had a few comments from people asking why we generally always focus our attention on the Big Six when we spend all of our time moaning about them. And we thought that's a reasonably fair point. We discussed why that is a little bit on the last episode. And so this week we wanted to talk about four clubs having particularly newsworthy seasons and why that is. So let's start with a club that are having an absolutely fantastic season. I'm sure we've only discussed them briefly on the podcast before. That is Sheffield United. They were promoted in the summer and currently sit level on points with Tottenham and 1 point behind a Champions League place. Ben, have you been surprised with how well they have played this season?
I think anyone who watched them in the Championship last year, you won't necessarily be surprised because they're a quality team and above all, it's an incredibly well-coached side. But clearly, the impact they've had and how high they are in the table has been remarkable. They've shown no fear whatsoever, regardless of who they've played. They possibly ran Liverpool as close as anybody has. And they're an excellent side to watch. They play that innovative system, the 3-5-2 with overlapping centre-backs, which has been talked about to death. But it's to me anyway, it's sort of it shows just how important properly good coaching is. And Wilder clearly is a very astute football brain. And he's got his team playing some really, really intelligent, interesting football.
Why is it that Chris Wilder hasn't received more praise than he has? Obviously, he took over Sheffield United. They're in League One. He's overseen two promotions. They're having this incredible season. Is it his age? Is it his appearance? Is it the tactics that he utilises? Jack, why do you think he's not been raved about like other managers in the league?
I think there's an element of a lack of PR from Wilder himself. He maybe does need to sort of pat himself on the back a bit more, make bigger claims in the media, work the media better. I think certainly there are doubts over the way he can take this side to the next level as well. You look at the schedule, whether he can implement this system or this squad, which is relatively small compared to his rivals, over a much busier schedule next season, particularly if they get into Europe. I think that's a slight question mark. Also, while this is a mightily impressive Sheffield United side, I think it certainly is a collective and lacks maybe several like standout players with excellent talent. And I think he needs to maybe prove himself managing egos, managing sort of big time players with huge reputations. And I think Sheffield United, the more they build, they will have to acquire those players, and it will be interesting to see how Wilder manages that and maintains the harmony in the group as well.
I think that's a little bit harsh on Wilder. I mean, surely you can make the case that, yes, you know, he doesn't sort of play with the media, he doesn't flirt with the media, but Sheffield United have been flying under the radar. There's seemingly no pressure on them. Do you mean more that the pressure is going to grow if they do end up in the Champions League or find themselves playing in Europe?
Yeah, I just think certainly it's a league where when you don't know what's coming, it's much more difficult. Next season, everybody will know what to expect from Sheffield United, and it just becomes more difficult to vary your tactics, to have that plan B. Mm. In that sense, yes. And then also with Wilder, I think he particularly craves the attention and the praise. I think he's very content in how things are going, and why wouldn't you be? I just think certainly with the signings of, say, Sander Berg coming in, a very talented player, but also crucially young and yet to prove himself in a big league, that's going to be much more easier to maintain the harmony in the squad rather than bringing in sort of established internationals. And maybe that's how he gradually builds. He brings in a bit more of an eclectic mix, utilising the vast sums of money that are going to come with maintaining top flight status for the next few years.
Ben, do you think it's going to fizzle out over the course of the end of the season? I mean, when you actually look at their fixtures, they've not got a terrible end. They visit United in March. That's probably the most difficult away match they've got left. But then they host Tottenham, Wolves and Chelsea, and there's some winnable fixtures in there. Can they keep on rising?
I think you'd be harsh to say at any point to doubt them now. I think they've shown us enough times that there's been sort of the period over Christmas where you'd say that their smaller squad would finally come back to haunt them a little bit. They got through that fine. They've had obviously little wobbles as they've gone, but it's what Wilde has done is he really has created something that's bigger than the sum of its parts, which is obviously exactly the dictionary definition of what a coach should be doing. He's getting more out of the players than their individual abilities. I think it's interesting what Jack mentioned, that he does sort of seem to be embracing and the club around him, embracing that sort of phase two. So phase one was clearly do what a lot of Championship clubs do when they come up, which is buy the best players from the Championship, to mean that worst case scenario, you go down and you're a much better side in the second tier than you were before. Phase two is now attracting different players and maybe buying that slightly more higher quality individual. Sunderberg's a really good example, I think, and they did a couple of interesting deals at the end of January where seemingly they know that they're now ready and going to stay in the Premier League, so now maybe they can kick on. I think it's just I think they should just enjoy it, to be honest. I mean, no one ever would have seen them being in this position at this point, and whether it fizzles out or not, it's still going to be an unbelievably good season.
Yeah.
And I think they should enjoy testing themselves against the teams higher in the division who, to be honest, barring Liverpool, none of them have covered themselves in glory. So they should see it as an opportunity to go and take some more scalps, to be honest.
I mean, their fans and their players would certainly enjoy a European run. Jack, could you see European football being something of a hindrance next season? And I ask this only because they've got the third smallest squad in the Premier League in terms of players used. So unless they went out in the summer and kind of added quite a few new faces, they could find themselves struggling with the sheer amount of games.
Yes, in theory. I think you mentioned the squad size. It's certainly going to affect them. But I think, optimistically, I'd be hopeful they could cope because, as Ben said, they can see this coming now. They are safe. They are already planning for that phase. I think the way that they are going to approach the end of season, they obviously still want to make Europe, but I think should they get in, it will be a bonus. They're not banking on that, and if they do get in, they've got many weeks and a few months to anticipate how that will work. I think they just seem to be really well run. They seem to planning for the worst but expecting the best almost. I think it's there's nothing to fear in that sense, like sides from the past, about that packed schedule and the Thursday-Sunday routine that has hurt a lot of clubs in the past. I think this is a team that if they were to achieve European football, then they would just lower the expectations maybe in the Premier League to
That's dangerous
again,
though, isn't it? They just remind me a little bit of Ipswich. Do you remember when Ipswich came up and they had that season playing really good attacking football? Like this huge breath of fresh air, then they get into Europe, beat Inter Milan, and it all goes like completely to shit.
I mean, it happened to Burnley, I think, last season when their season started in June, and it did affect them. But then they're not the same side in that I would argue that Sheffield United players maybe a more expansive, more sort of progressive style of football, perhaps. Not that Burnley's is any less effective, but they are quite similar in that they sort of got quite low expectations of what they can achieve. Burnley suffered quite a lot from having to start their season so early. You could see a scenario where Sheffield United might have something similar next season, say. But as with Sean Dyche, I would back Chris Wilder to get themselves out of that. So perhaps it's you dial it back slightly in terms of sort of how expansive you want to be. You maybe go back to basics a bit more and just get and grind out results. And as we've talked about in this studio a lot this season, the quality of the Premier League isn't the highest anymore. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's much to fear from giving it a go in Europe, because when you come back to playing in the Premier League on a Sunday, I don't think there's a great deal to fear from those sides around you.
Also, we're being pessimistic, because if Sheffield United finish above the likes of Man United and Spurs, their season won't be starting that early.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's nothing to fear in terms of the way he's managed that squad so far, and it would just be another challenge. The way Sean Dyche has reset a little bit, he gave it a go, endured a bit of a sticky patch, and then went back to basics. I think the way the fundamentals of this team will not go away, and it will just be about experimenting with the next phase. And if things do go slightly wrong, then I think they can always revert to type. The one thing I would be worried about, maybe more so than European football, is whether they can keep hold of like Dean Henderson. I think it's not a team packed with star players, but I think maybe he is fundamentally one of the top two or three players who is irreplaceable. And if they can't arrange for another deal, then I think he'd be tricky to replace, even with another loan.
I'd say on that note, I think the most irreplaceable figure is Wilder himself. I think that would be the real test, is if, I don't know what club it would be, and if a bigger, quote-unquote bigger club did come in for him, and if he would want to leave his boyhood club at that point, it'd have to be a good offer, of course. I think that would be the real sort of, that would be the thing you are going to have to game plan for and really worry about, because as with the likes of Dyche and other managers, the reason they are in this position, obviously they've got a club who understands top to bottom what they want to be, and a lot of joined up thinking, and they sort of, they've made a lot of good decisions in a row, but the be all and end all and the sort of the catalyst of all of it has been Wilder himself. And I think if they did lose him for whatever reason at some point, that would be very, very tough to replace.
Okay, good stuff. So I said Sheffield United had the joint third smaller squad in the Premier League in terms of players to use. Can you name the three clubs who have used fewer players?
I'm going to say...
There's definitely two surprising ones.
I feel like Leicester might be one. I
think Leicester have only used 21.
Okay, and two more. Any ideas, Ben?
Villa, maybe?
Nope. No, Villa have used quite a few. One is gettable. The rock bottom one I find really surprising. This makes for great podcast material. I mean, it's just dead air.
maybe Wolves?
Yes, Wolves are bottom. 20 players. Burnley's the other one.
Burnley to be expected, actually, now that I do know the answer, I think. Dyche.
Wolves surprise me.
Wolves, yeah, that is surprising given the options they have and the way they did try to pad that squad out last summer, and some signings worked, some notoriously didn't. Cutrone, for example, was sent packing very quickly. So, interesting.
Moving on to Wolves, obviously, I suppose in many ways they've set the blueprint for what Sheffield United would like to achieve, because they've got this smaller squad, recently promoted, made it into Europe in the first season, and yet obviously they're still making it work.
Yeah, exactly that. I think there's lots of parallels. I think the differences will be the, like we talked about, that star power. Mm. I think, obviously, it's no secret they've had some assistance from in the transfer market. And the likes of Ruben Neves and João Moutinho, they show their class week in and week out now. You've seen that Diogo Jota's back in the side now, and he is a tremendous player. Earlier in the year, it was all about Raúl Jiménez. I think the manager is outstanding, and it's sort of similar to Sheffield United in that they are, that whole squad have been built around this system of Nuno's back three. They all know exactly what they're doing, and each position is, they all know how to play their own roles within that wider system. Connor Cody's outstanding as that middle centre half in a three, whereas perhaps you wouldn't see him getting into many teams as a part of a two, but in that system he's perfect. Moutinho and Neves in the middle just run the show. And then you see like a wild card like Traore, he's just been given that freedom that he needed, as well as clearly having that sort of overall proper good coaching. Wolves been excellent. I think, yeah, if they have used in theory, if you are sort of injury free, you would rather use the least amount of players possible, because that means you must be winning games and players must be in form and enjoying themselves. And so, yeah, if you can only get away with using 20, 21 players a season, I think every manager would do that.
Something you've spoken about on the podcast a few times before is how, you know, the balance of power in the Premier League is slowly shifting away from those top teams in regard to, you know, the mid-ranking teams being able to keep their best players in a way that, you know, a decade ago they couldn't do that. I suppose Wolves are the perfect example of that, aren't they? They've got all these incredible players. Somebody like Neves is 22, and yet they've been able to kind of keep hold of them all and build a team around them.
Yeah, I mean, it was about a year ago that Pep Guardiola was asked about Neves and if they'd be interested in him. And he said, yeah, of course he would be, but he would cost 100 million. Mm. So they can't do that. Clearly, they've had some financial assistance, and George Mendes' help is always going to be very helpful indeed. But they've bought extremely well. Rui Patricio is an outstanding goalkeeper. Jimenez was a gamble when they bought him. It was like he'd never really sort of scored the goals consistently that you'd need from a proper number nine. He's kicked on and transformed himself. They really are sort of a prime example of, yeah, why would any of these players jump ship now? They sort of seem primed to kick on again. Clearly, there's a glass ceiling to a degree of what they can achieve and what we've gone over several times in previous weeks. But with the Premier League sort of in a state of flux where the traditional big six and the super clubs within it are somewhat struggling, then someone like Wolves, then why not? Yeah.
We're recording this on Wednesday. On Thursday, Wolves will play the second leg of their Europa League round of 32 tie. It looks like they're going to go through. How far do you think they're going to go, Rafa? I mean, when you actually look at the clubs involved, I mean, obviously, Man United and Arsenal have got fairly good chances if they take it seriously. Inter Milan are playing very well, but could rest players because they're going for the league. And Sevilla always win the Europa League. But when you move past those teams, Wolves have got a pretty good shout.
Yeah, I think they can win it. I don't see why not. I think you mentioned United and Arsenal, and I just think Wolves, in a one-off game, could beat either of those sides. They might even be favourites, depending on the progress under Arteta at Arsenal. They might be favourites for that tie. I think the way they get themselves up for the games at Molineux, I mean, we've just seen how much like trouble they've offered the big teams throughout the last year or so. You mentioned the star players they have, but I think we mentioned Wilder and the importance he has. Nuno equally is vital to the way this team has evolved. Not just the star signings, you just look at like Matt Doherty on the right, the way he's just gradually adjusted his game to every level up that's been put in front of him. Raul Jimenez, we mentioned, is a star player now, but hopeless at Atletico Madrid, just couldn't cut it. And then, we've seen a lot of strikers score plenty of goals in Portugal, but he wasn't one of them. So the way they've used him as a bit of a project has been mightily impressive. And I think just the way they have just a bit of versatility in that team, you can use raw power and strength, but they play nice stuff as well, and I think that'll work really nicely in Europe. You mentioned Inter probably favourites alongside United, but yeah, I think beyond those two teams, I think I'd put them right there with Arsenal. Maybe got slightly more goals to their when they're on song, I would say, than Wolves, and Sevilla obviously pretty handy. And then beyond that, there's no one really to fear for Wolves. Ajax look like they could be going out. I think Roma are very inconsistent. Bayer Leverkusen and Frankfurt, who have experience of going far last season, knocked out by Chelsea. But I think, yeah, Wolves, very shrewd bet, I think, for the Europa League this year. And it'll be a tournament they're targeting. While they do want top four, I think possibly Europa League might be more realistic once we get closer to the finish line, and perhaps United or probably Chelsea, because they're in the driving seat, if they can just edge away from the pack now that they're almost certainly out of the Champions League, maybe then Wolves turn their attention to Thursday nights and focusing on that.
Just finally on Wolves, they put out their annual accounts last week, which showed that they had made a profit of 21.6 million, which is a year on from a loss of 55.1. It was obviously such a risky strategy to pump all that money in when they're a Championship team, and we've seen that strategy, you know, backfire tremendously for other clubs. But I suppose in this case, Ben, it was, well, one, it was the right thing to do, and two, it looks like it's now given them a platform that they can kind of actually secure their position as a top half Premier League team.
I mean, it was an incredibly risky strategy, and they basically bet on themselves to go up, and they knew the consequences if they didn't. Clearly, it's not just about spending money, as ever. So Man United spent an awful lot of money, but it's about buying good players. So they had a strategy where they knew, and obviously at first it was, yeah, let's buy a lot of Portuguese players and whatever. But they knew what they were buying and how they were going to buy them and where they were going to fit them in. There was a plan the whole way. So you, in doing that, you mitigate that risk that if you do spend loads of money, at least you're going to get what you paid for. They were one of the great second-tier sides you've ever seen. They marched up that league and they left nothing to chance. I think if you look at in comparison to this year with Leeds and West Brom, who've done it a slightly different way, Wolves didn't even give a second thought to staying down. They knew they had to go up when and what right then and there, and they have done. And with the sort of that, I mean, buying a player from a Champions League level captain and playing him in the Championship was always going to give you a chance. But I mean, fair play to them. They took a risk and it paid off. And now they're reaping the rewards.
Okay, we're going to a break. When we get back, we're going to talk about two teams having very different seasons. Third place Leicester City and 18th place West Ham United. See you soon.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Indie Football Podcast. This week we are talking about a few clubs metaphorically outside the Premier League's Big Six. And it's about time that we spoke a little bit about Leicester City, who of course sit third in the table, behind only Liverpool and everybody's second club, Manchester City. We are recording this podcast on Wednesday, and today marks 1 year to the day since Brendan Rodgers took over, since he walked out on Celtic to join Leicester. And Ben, it couldn't have gone any better, really.
Yeah, a stunning year. Obviously, Leicester were hoping this is what they were getting when they hired Rodgers from Celtic, and certainly his time at Liverpool suggested that he had this sort of ceiling of a team capable of, in a normal year, challenging for the title and Champions League places. But it's gone almost better than you could ever expect it. He inherited a side that had a lot of talented players in it, but his effect on a lot of the players who are already there has been remarkable. Vardy is an entirely new player. He's going through a bit of a scoring drought right now, but he is largely the reason, his goals are largely the reason why they are where they are.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's like, obviously he's always had a reputation for younger players and they've got so many younger players playing well, but when you look at Vardy and Johnny Evans, it's incredible the sort of transformations they've made.
Yeah, outstanding. I mean, yeah, you look at the obvious people are like James Maddison and Ricardo Pereira and Ben Chilwell. But yeah, the sort of the foundations of that side is that they keep clean sheets and they play solid football. Johnny Evans has been remarkable. I think if he'd stayed at Manchester United, he'd be club captain by now. I think he's a phenomenal player. And I think it's one of those where Kalilu Sakho has played very, very well. But in many ways, you could argue that he's looking good because he's got Johnny Evans next to him. And he's been phenomenal. And yeah, Vardy's goals have got them into this position and then others have followed suit. Madison's been great. It'll be interesting, I'm sure we'll go on to it, but it'll be interesting to see how they, in the same way as Sheffield United, how you sort of maintain and kick on from here. They appear to have a strategy of you sell one player per summer, which is sort of a very forward-thinking, progressive attitude, knowing you can't possibly keep all of these players together at once, so you accept that one of them goes. The talk is that Madison's going to sign a new contract, which would suggest that maybe it's Chilwell who is the one who leaves this time. So, I mean, he's a very, very, very good left back, but if the only player you're going to lose from a squad as good as this is your left back, I think you'd take that.
And also, I guess a lot easier to keep players when you can offer them Champions League football.
Well, precisely that. And so I think someone like Maddison will take his chance. He's still young. He knows that that big, big move, if he continues to play as well as he is, will come eventually. But someone like Youri Tielemans has been outstanding. Wilfred Ndidi is a wonderful player. Ricardo Pereira, other than Trent Alexander-Arnold, might be the best right back in the division. They're another club who've spent money, but they've bought incredibly well. They did it the right way last summer, where you go and buy the three players you want and then you sell the one you didn't want to, rather than the other way around, so you get good value for money. They're a very well run club, and again, much like the other two clubs we've talked about today, they have capitalised on the traditional Big Six not performing anywhere near how they should do. And yeah, all the power to them.
As you say, off the pitch, they've been fantastic. When they won the Premier League, they obviously went out and kind of bolstered their squad a little bit ahead of a Champions League run. And a lot of those signings didn't work out. But if you look over the last two seasons, they signed Johnny Evans for $3.5 million, Ricardo Pereira, Madison for $25 million, Soyuncu $19 million, Tillmans we think was around $40 million. I can't think of many other clubs in the world who have signed players, you know, as good as that, let alone the Premier League.
Yeah, certainly very efficient in the market. I think it helps when you have a progressive thinking manager like Rodgers. He will attract the best talent, or best young talent, shall we say, who maybe have trepidation about making the step up to like a traditional top six club. They can now go to a club like Leicester and be guaranteed to have exposure to maybe Champions League football next season, certainly. Good minutes, as well as playing in a style of football which will lead to great development. So I think they're primed this summer to not only replace someone like Chilwell, but add to that group. I think they can add to their core 11 to 12, 13 players as well. I think you look at someone like Ayoze Perez, youthful right now, but I think he could develop into a bit more of a squad player. They could upgrade there. It's interesting to see how Rodgers, making a bit of a name of himself throughout his career, as sort of just building that fearlessness inside young players. Raheem Sterling, probably the most famous example, but maybe someone like Harvey Barnes. I mean, he looks tremendous. And if he can sort of follow in the footsteps of the way Madison has used that Leicester team as a platform to break into the England side, I think Barnes can certainly cut it at the top, top level now. And his progress has been rapid. So yeah, I just think the versatility as well under Rodgers. He thinks about the game. He has a number of systems which he goes to. I mean, the back three at the moment is looking good, but I think give him a chance in the market, and I think he will revert to maybe 4-3-3. So yeah, really exciting club. I think the way they know what they are. They're happy to cash in when clubs come calling and pay 2 or 3x what in-house they consider the value of one of their players, and then once they let one go, it's close shop, isn't it? And the others have to just bide their time and wait their turn. Riyad Mahrez is a good example. The way he behaved, maybe some would say a bit poorly, when he was denied his move, they managed that in-house, still got a bit more out of him in the years to come, and then eventually did sell him. So I think they're well set up. Rodgers has obviously signed for the long term now, and yeah, very exciting. I think while the others sort of mess up and make mistakes, I think they're just going to keep capitalising. And while there's four places available for the Champions League, I think they're going to be knocking on the door again next season, despite more expectations.
I wanted to come onto the market, actually, because as we mentioned in the first half of the pod, they haven't used that many players in the league. And also, if we are going to be a little bit critical, they have tailed off in recent weeks. They've picked up 12 points from their past 11 games. They've slipped well behind City. They crashed out of the cup. So are we expecting them to be active in the market, and do we think they need to be active in the market to push on and to perform in the Champions League as well as the Premier League?
I think no team should really sit on their laurels, and you should try and, I mean, if they've got Champions League football to promise to a new player, then you should definitely use that. Mm. I think
that's where clubs come unstuck a lot of the time, though, isn't it?
Was last time. They sort of bought a handful of players who weren't really what you'd expect, they didn't get out of them what you'd expect. I don't foresee that happening again. It would appear that Rodgers has got a very sort of specific idea for the players he buys, and you can see how they fit in. They knew that when they were signing Soyuncu, they were going to sell Maguire, and it was just going to be a seamless swap. I think in recent weeks, the tail off in form, I think you can directly correlate with Vardy's drop out of not scoring as many goals. I think if you can get him scoring again, I don't see the sort of the season fizzling out as we talked about with other teams. And in the summer, yeah, you need to use the opportunity. They are a team who, with the backing they have always been able to spend money, and they've tended to spend it well. I think they understand the value of buying the player rather than getting a good deal, which is not always the case in lots of teams higher up in the pyramid. So, but a player like Tielemans, who they had him on loan for 6 months. They knew he fit exactly what Rodgers wanted. $40 million on the top end of what Leicester would want to spend on a player. But they knew the value of getting the player in early in the window. He fit exactly what they wanted, and they paid the money. And you'd much rather have the player and 5 million, 10 million less than you wanted, than having all the money in the bank and not that player. And they've sort of, they clearly, they understand that. I would imagine they'll already have lots of targets in place.
What about Big Islam Slimani?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that didn't quite go how they wanted it to go. But
the season he's had, I mean, you can either flog him and get a much better price than you would have got last season, or he could come in and do a job.
Well, that's true. It will be interesting. I do think you need to, I mean, like we said, the sort of interesting thing with Rodgers' arrival has been the sort of revival of Vardy. And maybe the one criticism of Leicester is that they do, for all of the new players they've got, the new style, the sort of the pace they play with, they do still appear to live or die on Vardy's goals. So they do need to be looking at the transition period of the life after Vardy, I think, if you can go and find a striker. That said, I mean, Iheanacho looked to be one of the, maybe the sort of the missteps of late in recent seasons, but over the last sort of month, 6 weeks, he appears to have sort of turned a corner to a degree, and he looks a bit more like the player that he did in flashes at City. I don't think he's the long-term sort of heir to Vardy's throne, but he's certainly a sort of more of a usable option than he has been. I think, yeah, they would look up top, I think, to find, obviously it's the hardest position in the world to find, and there's going to be lots of other teams who are also looking for strikers at the same time. But their recruitment has been outstanding on the whole, and I would back them to, yeah, find a new striker at some point.
Okay, there's just enough time to pack in some misery before the end of the podcast. We're going to do a relegation battle-themed episode very soon, but I wanted to ask a couple of quick questions on West Ham, because at the start of the season, so many people thought that we would be talking about them like we're talking about these teams, Jack.
Yeah, certainly. I think West Ham, the way they set their stall out at the start of the season, they spent a lot of money, namely like over 40 million on Allaire. I think the way it's panned out, it's been nothing short of a disaster. The opposite of Sheffield United in terms of like the sum of their parts equaling much less. I think the way David Moyes has come in, I think he's found a squad which certainly doesn't suit his needs. So it's a real dilemma. I think the way they hired Moyes in a sign of desperation, but the squad isn't really there to suit his sort of results first mentality. And the run they're on at the moment, it's a disastrous run, and they could really be right down there and come another month and they could be gone, which is, it seems unthinkable, but that's the current predicament.
Were there any signs against Liverpool that, you know, there might be a bit of fight? I didn't watch the game, so it might be an absolute shit question, but
they showed something. They were better against Liverpool than an awful lot of teams have been this season. Whether that's because Liverpool showed a bit of complacency, perhaps, in the fact that they know it's already won and they know it was only West Ham, and they know that the well-publicised statistics of David Moyes' record away at major clubs is absolutely appalling. I quite like Moyes as a guy and as a manager. I think he's got something to offer. But he came in saying he was a winner and that's what he's going to do, and he simply hasn't. I don't think in any way it's all his fault. I think, as we've discussed before, there are far more problems at West Ham than the manager and the players, as we've all discussed. The squad itself is just, it's like two halves of the same team. It's like you've got Allaire and Yarmolenko and Felipe Anderson and Manuel Lanzini, and then you've also got Mark Noble and Aaron Cresswell and Declan Rice. It sort of doesn't, none of it fits together, and they're certainly not alone in that, but that's difficult. You could understand why David Moyes was looking for a Joe Allen on players like that in January, because he wants a few more grafters to try and get them out of the trouble they're in. Like Jack mentioned, the run they're on and the run of fixtures they've got to come is dreadful. It makes a game this weekend against Southampton, which Southampton one of the form teams in the division, it makes it absolutely must win. They should have beaten Brighton, I think, 3 weeks ago and completely threw away a 3-1 there. And they've now obviously got rid of the Man City-Liverpool games, which were just tossed those away. But they've still got Chelsea, Arsenal and Wolves and Tottenham in the next month or so. So while I don't expect any team to get cut adrift, given the sort of the overall poor quality of the league at that end, they are leaving themselves plenty to do. And as the crowd has shown before, they aren't the most patient, and nor should they be, given the standard of football they've been shown over the last decade. The last thing you need in a relegation battle is the crowd against you as well.
It feels like the mood is kind of decisively shifted these past few
years. It's, I mean, it's not great, is it? There's the protests against the board, which have been a long time coming, and I'm not going to sit here and say that they aren't at all warranted either. Going down would be an absolute disaster because they've, for example, I mean, Jared Bowen was £20 million and he's barely played yet. There's so much money sunk into very long-term contracts there. You'd hope they've got relegation clauses in their contracts to make them so they can actually sell some of these players. But, I mean, they're being all sorts. That wage bill will be one of the top. I mean, I've got it to hand. I'd say it's probably top eight in the division. And they're 18th. Relegation's a bad thing for any club, clearly. For West Ham, it'd be dreadful.
On that note, though, so Tony Evans wrote for us, was it at the beginning of the month? Recently, anyway, about the kind of, you know, the problems at West Ham and how they've had their identity stripped away. He had a really interesting line that jumped out where he said that essentially the damage being done to the club by Sullivan and Gold right at this moment and over the past few months and years is worse than the fear of relegation at this point. I mean, it's a strong statement and it met with quite a kind of divided reaction, but do you see where he's coming from?
Yeah, I'd concur. I think it's toxic, isn't it? The way the fans are totally disillusioned with the way their club is being run at the moment. The sad thing is it's a club with enormous potential. You think they, if they just capitalise on their location, they can certainly...
They tried, didn't they? They have tried.
I mean, they've spent money as well. I mean, they have money to spend. They've spent 40 plus million on Allaire, Felipe Anderson, similar sort of price. Fornals, 25 million. Bowen, 20 million. I mean, they'd be the envy of almost every club, bar maybe four or five in the league. So, I mean, they arguably spent more than Arsenal over the last few years as well. I just think, that, like Ben said, I think all clubs would be broken by relegation, devastated, but the way that they would like fall to pieces, I think it would be a real problem for them to come back. And I think it would be a really messy summer with a lot of players desperate to leave because they're just not, this is not what they've signed up for. And while David Moyes has got a very talented squad, I think he's gradually sort of pinpointing a couple of players to sort of get them out of this in a short-term basis. You look at Antonio on Monday night, he is somebody that can scrap and he can fight. Mark Noble obviously knows what it takes. And then I think they just need to build on that block in front of Fabianski. Diop and Ogbonna is pretty solid and Declan Rice as well. If they just build around that as a foundation, I think when they come out the other side at the start of April, games where they should be winning or they have a much better chance of winning, that's when it's going to be crunch time and they've got to perform. And I mean, they've put their bet on David Moyes. I mean, it's not a sure thing by any stretch, but I think they've got a month to get things right because they won't be cut adrift, and then it's up to them to hit the ground in that last final stretch, and otherwise it is pure disaster.
Yeah, because the irony is they're not going to struggle to shift any of these players, are they? I mean, Diop's been linked with just about everybody. Declan Rice will go.
I guess that's true to a degree, but I'm not sure how many clubs would be willing to pay top dollar for Felipe Anderson, saying give him the contract that West Ham gave him 2 years ago, whatever it was. Ditto Andriy Yarmolenko or Lanzini or these various players. It's not that they're bad players, it's that they are paid an awful large amount, which is going to make them... I mean, Bowen would go tomorrow. That's an easy sale. It's harder to go and get someone to pay what the 45 million you pay for Allaire. You're not getting that back. I can understand the sympathies from somewhere, maybe relegation could sort everything out because you could strip it all back and almost start again.
But with these people in charge,
I mean, that's true, and it's also a fallacy. The Championship is a remarkably difficult division to get out of. And you look at the teams down there now. Leeds have got one of the best managers of his generation, and he's struggling to get them out of it. It's incredibly difficult to do, and although maybe you'd think, okay, right, we can sort of reset and that it wouldn't be the worst thing to spend 1 year out of the Premier League, given the colossal amount of money that is now swimming around the top division, you can't be out of that for 1 year. And a team like West Ham, with the expectations that they should rightly have and the, like Jack said, the opportunity that and the sort of platform that they've squandered, they can't not be in the Premier League.
Okay, good stuff. I think we managed to navigate that politically enough that we won't have to issue an on-air apology. Feels like we did okay. Okay, there's just enough time left for hero and villain of the week. Who's been villain, Jack?
I'll do villain. I think Bartomeu, president of Barcelona. I mean, the definition of a villain, I mean, heckled and whistled at the new camp. I don't think there's many more intimidating experiences in world football. He is persona non grata. I mean, some really cutting words from Gerard Piquet. And it's going to be Lionel Messi with a little help from Griezmann to paper over the cracks. And I think the damage has been done in terms of the scandal which surrounds him. And I think this is a club with some of the most passionate fans in the world. And he is the most vilified man in Catalonia at the moment.
They really weren't very good last night either.
No. I think almost predictable. A staggering stat that it was Griezmann, the first goal by a Barcelona player not named Lionel Messi since 2015 with Neymar in a knockout stage away from home. So, yeah, Napoli, even though they did let them back into the game after Mertens' goal for a 1-1, I think certainly that tie is not dead, and tougher tests await Barcelona, and they just continue to punch below their weight given the resources they have.
Okay, for hero, I'm going for Tyson Fury. I know it's not football, but we were talking in the office about the most sort of stunning or shocking things we've seen in sport. And for me, that was probably, talking to you about it, Ben, shocking thing I've seen in sport since Germany beating Brazil, I reckon.
Yeah, a remarkable result. And
is there another massive football one? I suppose the comeback.
Barcelona against Liverpool last year was stunning, but in a different way, in less than a narrative terms, this is an actual fairy tale story to sort of come back from where you came back from. A stunner, the least sort of likely, this isn't a boxing podcast, but basically the least likely of the four possible outcomes of the fight. And it came true, and from the sort of moment the first bell rang, everyone knew it was coming, and it's still as stunning to see.
You need to get Buncey. Imagine Buncey and Tony Evans on the same podcast.
My word. My word.
Little teaser.
On that note, thank you. Sadly, that's all we got time for this week. Be sure to follow Indie Football on social media to keep up to date with everything that's going on. If you're a new listener, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you listen. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.